Right. When we read the whole of those chapters of Luke, it's really good. Today, I've actually got two messages for you, so you're going to have to bear with me. I promised you last week that I'm going to do the fulfillment, which I will. Then I'm going to go from the fulfillment into our everlasting deliverance. And I just felt I couldn't do one without the other. So if you need to get up and walk around while I'm speaking, please feel free, because I know you've been sitting there for a long time and we've had a long message. So if you want to get up now and have a little stretch before we even start, you're welcome to. So let's go to the fulfillment first. And since the entire Passover service is woven with rich symbolism, we must ask, when we had our Passover Seder 3 months, why did we have 3 months? And there's, of course, rabbinic tradition to that. And rabbinic tradition holds that they represent 3 groups of Jewish people: the Kohanim, or the priests, the Levi, and the Israelites themselves. Another tradition holds that it's Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Yet rabbinic tradition is at a loss to explain why the middle piece of matzah must be broken. Why must it be the Levi'im that is broken and not the other groups? Why must Isaac be broken and not Abraham or Yaakov? So rabbinic tradition is absolutely silent on these issues. Neither explanation fits the symbolism behind this breaking bread of ceremony. In reality, the triunity, as they call it in Christian circles, of the Godhead is being symbolized within 3 parts with the oneness of Yehovah, just as the 3 matzahs are in the oneness of that linen matzah tash or matzah bag. The first one, of course, is Yehovah. The second one is the Son, the Messiah. And that is the one that is broken, that died, gets wrapped up in the linen cloth, and is hidden away and buried. It's brought back at the 3rd cup of wine, or the 3rd day, when he rose. But in the rabbinic tradition of Passover Seder, they don't understand that or see that. At first glance, this assertion may appear to be a fanciful attempt to Christianize Judaism or Christianize the Jewish Passover. But the evidence to me is overwhelming to the contrary. First, the Afikoman was not present in the day of Yeshua. Okay, it didn't happen then. They didn't have the Afikoman when Yeshua, which is that middle piece of matzah that's broken and taken away. It was an addition to Passover later on. And the last solid food taken in that day was the lamb at the dinner. It wasn't the matzah. Rabbinic tradition holds that the Afikoman now represents the lamb, since they have got no more sacrifices, and therefore everyone must eat of it. Secondly, there is much debate among the rabbis concerning the meaning of the word Afikoman. The problem is compound, since Afikoman does not exist in the Hebrew language. It's just not there. Rabbinic consensus usually explains that it's meant, and it means dessert or your sweets, since it's eaten after the meal. Amazingly, Afikoman is actually a Greek word and is the only Greek word in the common language of Yeshua's day in the Passover Seder. Everything else is Hebrew. I don't think it happened in Yeshua's day. It happened later, after the fall of the temple in 70 AD. The Greek use the verb ichneomai. Is that how we say it? ichneumai. And its translation actually means I came. So it's something that's been added through the Greek after the fall of the temple that said that Yeshua came when they used the Afikoman. So many traditions have developed around the Afikoman. Moroccan Jews save a piece of the Afikoman when they use when travelling at sea throughout the year. They believe that if a piece of the Afikoman is tossed into stormy waters, it will make the waters still. It is easy to see the origin of this tradition, as Yeshua spoke and calmed the stormy sea of Galilee or the Lake Kinneret. It must be also asked, how could the Afikoman, if it speaks of Yeshua, make its way into the Jewish Passover when the majority of Jewish people don't accept Yeshua as their Messiah? The situation in the first century must be explained to shed a light on this question. And that came from the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Pentecost or Shavuot in Acts 2, where 3,000 sons of Israel came from different countries believing on Yeshua. The total count was actually much higher since the 3,000 did not include women or children. It only included the men. So these Jewish believers would have taken the message of the Saviour with them to their Jewish brethren as they returned to their homelands, and many undoubtedly came to know Yeshua as a result of their testimony. In Acts 21 and verse 20, is that up there? Yaakov and all the elders told Shaul, "You see, brother, how many myriads of Jews there are who have believed. They are talking only about Jewish believers in Jerusalem and numbered them in their thousands. Some estimate that by the end of the first century, there were more than 1 million Jewish believers in the Messiah. While this was certainly not a majority within the nation, it was a large enough number to send shockwaves throughout the synagogues everywhere concerning the messiahship of Yeshua. Another first century event could only set the stage but mandated a change in the Passover observance, and that was the Roman war machine that rolled into Israel, and in AD 70, or this current era 70, levelled the absolutely breathtaking temple. This was a disaster at the highest magnitude, since the majority of the Levitical law was based upon the temple and its sacrifices. Without the temple, there could be no more sacrifices. Without the sacrifices, there could be no more Passover lamb. For Yehovah had strictly commanded, therefore you shall sacrifice the Pesach to the Lord to Adonai your Elohim from the flock and the herd in the place where Adonai chooses to put his name. And that came from Deuteronomy 16:2. So without the Passover lamb, the future of Passover observance was threatened, and the Jewish people faced the dilemma of ceasing to observe Passover or changing it to be observed without a lamb. In addition, Jewish believers had already broken away from the sacrificial system, believing that the Messiah had made a once and for all sacrifice upon the stake. They were already celebrating Passover without the lamb, choosing to incorporate the broken matzah or afikoman into the service at the precise point in which the Lord had, or Yeshua had said, "And do this in remembrance of me." It's not difficult to imagine this tradition being borrowed by others seeking to switch to a lambless Passover without them even realizing the full significance behind the ceremony. So ultimately, Pesach foreshadowed the Jewish Messiah as the Passover lamb. The Hebrew prophet Yeshayahu, or Isaiah, spoke of the Messiah in terms of the Passover lamb and the greatest redemption that he would bring in Isaiah 53. He would be the innocent, pure lamb upon which the judgment of Yehovah would fall in place of the people. He would be the one with great bitterness of suffering and death, would shed his blood to provide the greater deliverance from sin. What I think is the most tragic thing is that in millions of Jewish homes today, the most obscure ceremony in the Passover, the Afikomen, is the one that gives the greatest and most powerful meaning. The Afikomen, the He Came, has been an annual reminder that the Messiah, the true Passover Lamb, has already come. So year after year, the small voices of children drift through the night, saying, "This is why is this night different?" And the testimony of the Afikomen echoes back in reply, "I came. For it was on this holy day that the true Passover Lamb was crucified, buried, and on the third day rose again to provide deliverance from sin." It is only in Yeshua that the Passover message finds its fullness. The Lamb still cannot be separated from the holy day. There is no question that Yeshua, and it is the most important of all, is He your Passover Lamb? Have you placed your trust in the Messiah and His sacrifice as your only hope of getting into heaven? Even as the ancient Israelite was required to individually apply the blood to his door, so too today men and women must individually make a decision concerning the Lamb of Yah. There is still no deliverance without the Lamb. So let us look at our deliverance, our everlasting deliverance. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 7 and 8, if we could go there, please. You got it, honey? If you want to stand and have a wriggle, please feel free. Do you want me to go on? It's there. Okay. Get rid of the old hummets so that you can be a new batch of dough. Because in reality, you are unleavened. For our Pesach lamb, the Messiah, has been sacrificed. So let us celebrate the Seder not with leftover hummets, the hummets of wickedness and evil, but with the matzah of purity and truth. Pesach or Passover is all about Yeshua's sacrifice and our deliverance. Consequently, the word of Yehovah admonishes us to celebrate this reality with a genuine and sincere heart of reverence and worship, taking the full measure of grace and truth that the feast points to. Yehovah believes in refreshing our salvation experience, knowing that the world, the flesh, and the devil war against the new creation within us and will wear us down unless we remember and practice the truth. These biblical feasts, and this one in particular, are our reminders. At this time, the entire Jewish world, as well as many Christians, recognize Yeshua in the biblical feasts. That they recognize that he will be immersed once again in the celebration of Pesach or Passover. And on the special evening, millions of souls from the four corners of the earth will engage in an elaborate ceremonies, including scripture readings, singing, dining, and teaching Yehovah's word, all focusing on the saga of Israel's greatest exodus from Egypt. So it's about remembering our journey. Yehovah commanded Israel in Devarim, Deuteronomy 16, verses 1 to 3. Observe the month of Aviv and keep Pesach to Yehovah your Elohim in the month of Aviv. Yehovah your Elohim brought you out of Egypt at night. You are to sacrifice the Pesach offering from flock and herd to Yehovah your Elohim in the place where Yehovah will choose to have his name live. You are not to eat any hummets with it, for For 7 days you are to eat it, matzah, the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste. Thus you will remember the day you left the land of Egypt as long as you live. The Passover feast is intended to inspire Yehovah's people to remember where they came from and who their deliverer is. Against the dark background of the oppression, hardships, futility, and desperation of slavery, Yehovah's work of deliverance shines brightly, dispensing fresh hope and assurance from one generation to the next. Pesach tells us that Yehovah knows our fallen state, and he hears our cries. He will come to deliver us. When things go from bad to worse and when all hope is gone, Pesach points to our Saviour, our beacon of hope, our anchor of faith. It is the testimony of his rescue mission, leading a people who are storm-tossed, helpless and lost to a safe harbour. We all need Passover to remind us every so often of where we've come and where we are going. So Pesach can be a feast of freedom. A freedom for what? The key message of Pesach is Shemot Exodus chapter 8 and verse 1. The message is, let my people go so they can worship me. Don't let my people go so they're free from slavery. Don't let my people go so they can return to the promised land. Let my people go so they can worship me. That is the key. Israel was set free from Egypt's oppression for the purpose of service and worship. Freedom in this respect is not an end unto itself, rather a means to a Yehovah life of service and fruitfulness. In fact, a careful study of the pre-Exodus events in Egypt reveals that the Passover miracle was offered to a people who barely wanted it. Yes, the children of Israel cried out to the Lord for help in their affliction, but their concept of help was not what Yehovah had in mind. All they wanted was relief, relief from slavery. Yehovah, on the other hand, was accomplishing deliverance. It was no different in Yeshua's day. Excuse me. Am I on? Yep. In Yeshua's day, they were looking for deliverance from the Romans and a king, not someone who was going to leave them. And many of Yehovah's children are in the same place today. We beg Yehovah for help in our circumstances, while at the same time we resist his deep work of deliverance in our hearts. The message of freedom may be popular and politically correct in Western culture, but very seldom do the advocates of freedom ever lead those freshly freed into a life of substance and meaning. Often the newly acquainted freedom, be it political, economical, or ideological, merely opens the door for the next trap. Freedom for the sake of freedom is insufficient. Freedom is but a license to become. The rest is choice. What we do with that freedom when we've got it. Once freed from oppression, whatever a person or nation may become is entirely subject to their choices. The nations that Australia has helped to become liberated, such as Afghanistan, Iraq, East Timor, in recent decades, are in that very balance today. As is obvious to any honest observer, freedom alone, without taking on the yoke of Yehovah, is not the solution for anybody's problems. In fact, Yeshua warned us sternly that a freed soul which is not filled with Yehovah's Ruach or Spirit will eventually end up seven times worse than its original state. We won't go to Matt at Yahoo chapter 12, please, verses 43 to 45. When an unclean spirit comes out of a person, he travels through dry country seeking rest and does not find it. Then it says to itself, I will return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house standing empty, swept clean and put in order. Then it goes and takes with it seven other spirits more evil than itself. They come and live there, so that in the end, the person is worse off than he was before. And this is how it will be for this wicked generation. So what is true deliverance? As Israel was in Egypt, likewise many are today. We wallow in oppression and the enemy's grip. We cry out for relief. Yehovah sends deliverance to break our yoke and our propensities to become enslaved again. We fuss and complain in fear of change and loss of the familiar. Yehovah turns up the heat to make us make up our minds. And finally, we are delivered almost in spite of ourselves. Some of you might be in this very quandary right now, negotiating with Yehovah on how delivered you really want to be. Pray that when you pray to Yehovah for relief, that you will also be made willing to accept his full deliverance. That is what Pesach is all about. True deliverance, as the Pesach teaches, does not come without conflict and drastic changes. Newly acquired liberty always calls for responsibility, faith, and accountability. In Israel's case, deliverance from slavery was necessitated an initial deterioration of their conditions and extreme changes in lifestyle, location, and priorities. The nation was evacuated overnight from its 400-year-old root in the fertile land of Goshen and was thrust into an extended wilderness trek. Eventually, true deliverance will lead the liberated souls into a purposeful and intentional warfare in order to clear the promised land and take possession of Yehovah's promise, as was the case with Israel and Canaan. Applying these principles to our lives, praise Yah, we don't have to wait 40 years. One can get a better understanding of why the Apostle Shaul charged the Talmudim, celebrate the feast with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. He said so knowing that our instinctive carnal tendencies will always follow the path of least resistance, keeping us content and temporary relief rather than genuine deliverance and transformation. Is your Pesach experience one of lasting deliverance or merely temporary relief? The Ruach HaKodesh is not another fix. Yeshua is the Lamb of Yehovah. The historic Pesach, though nearly 3,500 years old, is rich in relevance for those who live today in the reality of the Mashiach's work of redemption. The 10 plagues which brought down Egypt's gods speak of the spiritual warfare that is constantly raging in the heavens on our behalf. Pharaoh's circulated hardness of heart still serves Yehovah's purposes in magnifying the power of Yeshua while drawing his people to his exit strategy. The bitter herbs, the roasted meat, the blood of the perfect lamb, the unleavened bread, the terrible night when the angel of death passed over the Hebrew homes, the exodus on the following morning, carrying Egypt's treasures, and the enemy's last ambush at Yam Suf, or the Sea of Suf, all testify of Yehovah's great work of salvation in Mashiach Yeshua. Ultimately, they all point to our great deliverer, who is Yeshua. Not only is the Passover a defining event in Israel's identity, it's also the core of Yeshua's own calling and mission when he came to earth to save us. Of all of the majestic names and titles, he was prophetically recognized and celebrated as the Lamb of Yehovah. When he first emerged from his hidden life in the Galil, stepped onto center stage in Yehuda, immersing the Jewish nation at the Yarden while preparing the way for Yeshua, Jochanan and the immerser saw Yeshua coming down the riverbank and declared in Jochanan and John 1:29-34, "Behold, the Lamb of Yehovah, who takes away the sin of the world. I myself have seen and have testified that this is the Son of Yehovah." Led by the Ruach HaKodesh into the public ministry on earth, the Son of Yehovah revealed himself first as the Lamb of Yehovah, preparing for the great and ultimate sacrifice. Yeshua identified himself as the Lamb of Yehovah, not only at his initial public appearing by the Yarden, but also at the closing of his earthly mission in Jerusalem 3.5 years later. It was during the Pesach, or Passover meal, at the upper room that our Yeshua lifted up the cup, broke the bread, and announced that the Brit Hadashah that was soon to be confirmed in his own person and his own expense. That is, the renewed covenant was soon to be confirmed. In Luke 22, verses 15 to 16, which we read today, he said to them, "I really wanted so much to celebrate this Seder with you before I die. For I tell you, it is certain that I will not celebrate it again until it is given its full meaning in the kingdom of Elohim." It's not given its full meaning on this earth. It's given its full meaning in the kingdom of Elohim. Yes, we're kingdom living now, but we're not in the kingdom now. They are Yeshua's own words, not mine. Though slain before the foundation of the world, according to Revelation 13 and verse 8, everyone living on earth will worship it except those whose names are written in the book of life, belonging to the Lamb slaughtered before the world was founded. The Son of Yehovah had to step through the doorway of space and time to shed holy blood on our behalf at Jerusalem. His sacrificial death in order was determined from all eternity, but he had to take place precisely at the Feast of Pesach in order to fulfill all prophecy and righteousness. It is the blood of Yehovah's own Pesach lamb that delivers us from the ultimate Egypt, our slavery to sin and the curse of death. Yeshua is our Lamb of eternity. The Lamb had not disappeared following his death and resurrection. He is in heaven, and his blood is still fresh upon the altar, which is made without hands. Caught up in the Ruach, Jochanan described what he saw, saying in Revelation 5 and verse 13, "I heard every creature in heaven, on earth and under the earth and on the sea, yes, everything in them, saying, to the one sitting on the throne and to the Lamb belong praise, honor, glory and power forever and ever." Even more, not only was the Lamb of Yehovah in the heart of heaven's worship at the time of that vision, but Jochanan further prophesies that he will be there forever, seeing the holy city in eternity. Jochanan testified in Revelation 21, verses 1 to 3, "Then I saw the new heaven and a new earth. The old heaven and the old earth had passed away, and the sea was no longer there. Also I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from Elohim, prepared to take a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, See, Elohim's Shekinah is with mankind. He will live with them. They will be his people, and he himself, Elohim, with them, will be their Elohim. For all eternity, the Lamb of Yehovah lives to take intercession. I'm sorry, but I've had something come across my screen that I can't get rid of. To make intercession, and he is the King of Kings. For all eternity, his sacrificial work will continue to uphold and secure Yehovah's new creation. Pesach, the feast of sacrifice, deliverance, and freedom, is our everlasting celebration. That is why we have to worship the Lamb. This is the season to celebrate Yeshua, our Saviour, and worship him as Yehovah's perfect Lamb. He who brought Israel out of Egypt, sustaining her Pesach, is meant to help us remember. Remember Yehovah. Remember his love and faithfulness. Remember Yeshua's sacrificial death at Golgotha. Remember his power and intervention in your life yesterday. And remember to trust him for tomorrow. For in Messianic Jews chapter 13 and verse 8 says, Yeshua HaMashiach is the same yesterday, today, yes, and forever. So let us now take time to look inward, look at ourselves. Have we really committed ourselves to Yeshua? Are we taking this time of Pesach as seriously as he wants it to, or are we just commemorating it as a festival that's ordered by in the Torah of Moshe? Or are we making it a heartfelt thing? I want you to spend some time now just thinking for yourselves. And if your attitude hasn't been right, if something hasn't been completely in line with Yehovah's word, with what I've said today, spend some time before we come to the table, where today we break matzah, and think about what Yeshua has done for you. Where have you come since you first accepted him to where you are now? What still needs to be looked at and fixed up? Where are you still falling short? I want you to spend some time with him now. We'll play just some music for a little while and see where you're at before we come to the table to take of the matzah and the cup, which represents Yeshua's broken body and blood for us.